I'm Kevin Middleton.
And I'm Samantha Berg. And this is The Bridge to Everywhere.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us on The Bridge to Everywhere. I'm Kevin Middleton, and I'm here in the studio with Samantha Berg. And today's guest is Dr. Jill Valerius, and she's going to talk to us about functional medicine. And we've known Jill for a number of years now, and it's a kind of a standing joke between Samantha and I, because we'll be out in the most remote parts of Alaska, either, you know, hiking, and who comes along but Dr. Jill on a mountain bike blowing past us. And then we'll be somewhere remote skiing, and who comes by but Dr. Jill just blasting past us on skis. So it's really fun to have you on the show, and we're really looking forward to the dialogue tonight.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you here. And we just want to give our listeners a little bit of an introduction to who you are, and then we'll jump right into the show. So Dr. Jill Valerius has been practicing in the Matsu Valley since 2004 at Capstone Family Medicine in Wasilla. She graduated from the University of Minnesota Medical School, and she completed a residency in family medicine. Her undergraduate degree in athletic training was obtained at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, and she's been a certified athletic trainer for over 20 years. She has a special interest in sports, preventative, and functional medicine. Recently, Dr. Valerius was accepted into the certification program through the Institute for Functional Medicine. This will help to further her education and interest in a more system-based and holistic approach to patient care and medicine. And Dr. Valerius grew up in Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and she enjoys biking, running, soccer, cooking, and learning. So welcome, Dr. Jill. It's great to have you here.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
So what we'd like to talk about a little bit is just, first of all, how you got interested in medicine in the first place, and then get a little bit into the evolution of what changed from practicing medicine in a traditional way in a family practice, and how you moved into practicing more in the principles of functional medicine. And we do want to get into what are those principles. But first, we just want to start on how you got into medicine in the first place. So a little bit of your background.
So as a child, something I think my mom recalled when I was probably in second or third grade, something had happened. And I, from that point on, whether it was seeing maybe a disabled child or something, she can tell the story. But at that point on, I had decided that I wanted to be a doctor. And so ever since, that's just the one thing that I've always wanted to do. In my undergrad work, I went to La Crosse in southern Wisconsin, and it was there that I chose to pursue physical education and athletic training, because I felt like it was something that I could do in the interim that at that point felt more exciting than being a biology major or a chemistry major, because I wasn't terribly interested in that, as silly or, I don't know, as hard as that is to think of a doctor not maybe being so interested initially. But athletic training was a really great avenue for me to start to learn the anatomy and physiology, and also to really be able to work with people rather than maybe animals and that kind of stuff. So it was a super transition.
Well, and it kind of set the stage for moving into what you're doing now with functional medicine, right? Because you're dealing with healthy people and trying to keep them healthy and moving. You're not necessarily dealing with a population of sick people when you're dealing with people who are, you know, they get injured and you're trying to get them better. But in general, you're working with a healthy population. And so there, it's a different approach than if you've got people who are already sick and you're trying to get them better, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the principles from athletic training are really focused on mainly on injury prevention, so not only in evaluating and rehabilitating injuries, but also how to optimize performance, which really kind of brings me more full circle into the functional medicine now as more performance and wellness optimization rather than maybe disease management.
Yeah, so you're looking at, you know, what's the person's potential and trying to help them reach that instead of just, you know, just getting them out of the hole, basically, and now what, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So once I went into medical school, I chose family medicine, and that I had some really great mentors growing up as a child that were two of my family medicine physicians, and it seemed natural for me. Like, that kind of was the field I chose from the starting point. So that has kind of helped me to continue this wellness and preventative focus, but also being able to really work with entire families, with people of all ages, which is what I enjoy most about what I'm doing, is being able to work with the whole spectrum of ages and generations and families, which is a really unique opportunity to be able to have.
That's awesome. But there's some challenges in family medicine too, right? Because you have to be such a, because you're such a generalist, so you have to know a little bit about a lot of different things. So any particular challenges you've found in doing family medicine?
I think the fact that you do need to know a little bit about many things is challenging, but it's also some of the fun in it for me, and the challenge. As I went through training, it's always interesting when you're speaking with students or residents, when you rotate through different medical specialties, and there's either people who love every specialty they do and subspecialty that then they can't decide, like, which do I want to choose. For me, I appreciated each of those, but for the most part, doing one focused thing, I was kind of like, no, I don't really want to do one particular thing that much. So the challenge lies in trying to have a broad enough knowledge base and be proficient at dealing with multiple different things during the day and each day, but it's the fun for me.
But you never know what's going to show up in your office in a given day, right? what kinds of things are going to show up.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, Dr. Jill and I just had an exchange over a patient that had a botfly infestation, and I actually had a patient email me a picture of something that she got in, where was it? It wasn't Costa Rica. I can't
Guatemala.
Guatemala, yeah. And the patient had actually emailed me a photo of this botfly, and I didn't know what it was, and I sent it to Dr. Jill, and she happened to be with somebody who was infectious disease expert?
I was with a girlfriend whose mother was a microbiologist, and she just happened to, she's like, I think it's a botfly larva. So it was pretty fun, and we were able to, I just did some Google searching on the iPhone, and we were really quickly able to match it up. And
I think that's amazing how information technology makes this kind of thing possible. Isn't that extraordinary? I mean, within a few minutes, you can harness the resources and knowledge base of many people unrelated by distance.
To go from a phone call, you know, or a text message with a photo of, I just pulled this out of my knee. What is this?
To a diagnosis.
And then I don't know, maybe we need to get you to an infectious disease expert to, you know, and I said that, well, I've got Dr. Jill on my cell phone, so I'll send her the picture, and she happened to be with somebody, and then we figured out what this thing was, and the patient ended up having them removed. And it all turned out well.
You know, and on that note, I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. So if I ever do go down to Guatemala, this is from a mosquito bite, is that right? It starts with a mosquito bite, and
correct,
a mosquito is actually hijacked by a botfly, and they implant the eggs on the underbelly of a mosquito, and the mosquito bites the host, and then in some way the eggs are dropped into the wound site. Is that it?
I read about it at the time, but I'm not even positive that the mosquito has to bite you.
Wow, which could just land on you.
Which would make it more creepy if that were the case.
You know, and I think I heard a story, or someone is telling me that it's a, you know, in the local community, it's considered an honor. You know, a person who's, I mean, they might have been joking.
Well, you know, in Jewish culture, it's considered an honor if a seagull poops on you, too, but I'm not looking forward to that. So I guess we got a little off topic there, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go back.
But one of the things about family medicine, we had about 20 medical residents come into our office a few months ago, and it was so amazing to actually speak with the students coming in, and they really did have a passion for learning. They just, and what is required of them is unbelievable. I mean, it is really a rigorous program, physically, mentally, on every level. They're stretched, and their hearts are in the right places, and family medicine, you know, was truly their passion. And it's exciting to think about how this field is changing, you know. And so, you know, looking at functional medicine and how strong a movement is that? We want to talk about what it is.
Well, I would like to get how she
and how you got there, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about so you go to medical school, you decide to become a family medicine doctor, and then what's the process for that? How does that work? So you graduate,
go through your 4 years of medical school, and in your final year, you match with a program. So you need to decide somewhere in that time, like what it is that you think you want to specialize in. So once you get matched into a program, whether it be a general internship, internal medicine, family medicine, surgery, you know, any specialty. So I had chosen family medicine, which is kind of where I was headed probably since I was in second grade or whenever I decided I wanted to do this. I had chosen family medicine, and I went up to Duluth, Minnesota, which is where I'd actually done my first 2 years of medical school. And that was a really neat opportunity. It is a two-year program that meshes with the University of Minnesota of Minneapolis or Twin Cities. And so there were 50 of us in each class, and there's two-year classes up there, which was a really unique opportunity to be in a class of 50 people. And then just for the instructor-to-student ratios, our rotations were in a smaller town with not a lot of, you know, competing things. So we had great exposure there. So I had chosen to go back up to Duluth for residency because I'd done a number of my rotations there, which was really nice. If you're in a major medical school and you're a student on a rotation or a family medicine resident, you're one of 10, and you're really at the back of the pack. So being the opportunity I had being in Duluth, especially as a resident, I was one in 10 in two hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to work really one-on-one, and that was the same experience I'd had in medical school. So when I got into residency, I had the opportunity probably in my second year, I think, I got to meet a gal who had graduated about 5 years or so prior to me coming to Duluth. And she was really interested in integrative medicine or, you know, at the time, maybe more alternative medicine, it was coined. And she had just made an impression upon me at that time. And so it made me become more interested. And as I went through completing my residency, I spent a couple of years after residency working as an emergency room physician and an urgent care physician, and then had decided to come back into family medicine when I moved here.
That's quite a change, doing emergency room medicine to family medicine.
Yeah, it's a transition that a lot of family medicine residents make pending where you train. Once you have your medical license, you can moonlight, so to speak. So that is generally in an emergency room or in an urgent care center. And in northern Minnesota, there's lots of little emergency rooms. So I had covered a 9-month position right out of residency. One of my teachers or attendings had taken a Bush Foundation scholarship. So I jumped into a 10-year-old practice for the first 9 months out of residency, mm-hmm. which was eye-opening and overwhelming, but really fun at the same time. And I continued to do emergency medicine through that whole time as part of that job and then outside of that job. And then I had continued to do more emergency medicine for another year and a half or so, at which time I decided, number one, a job opportunity came here for me. And then I decided I also wanted to transition back into family medicine. Different stress level and different stressors to both jobs, both good and bad on both sides. I had still had the integrative or alternative medicine thing floating around in the back of my head. I just found last night I grabbed my textbook that I bought back probably right before I moved up here. In 2004, and it was a textbook of integrative medicine, one of the first textbooks of integrative medicine, and so that has kind of been in the back of my mind for a long time, and I think that with my athletic training and my family medicine background that I've had more of that approach, and I feel like I've been pretty open to, if you will, more alternative or just non-MD therapy.
Could you give some examples of that and maybe how one defines integrative medicine?
Well, that's a brilliant question. You know, I think there's a lot of ways you could define integrative medicine. The way I personally would, optimizing and looking at integrative medicine as an approach, to me, that's using all of our resources. So that's my background in training as an MD or allopathic medicine. It is appreciating what an osteopathic physician has. It is appreciating what can your naturopath, you know, the role we all play, the acupuncturist, the massage therapist, energy therapy, nutritionists. And there's a million things that we could probably come up with. But I think it's really, to me, integrative is being able to assimilate in learning how to utilize all of those things together, because we all have great things to offer. And mostly, we have great things to offer if we offer them all, really.
And so you're looking in this kind of thing, you're looking at the individual patient, and you're saying, you're taking a look at what's the whole picture here and what's really the best tool for the job. And it may be a combination of several different things, but it's not just a one-size-fits-all. If the person comes in with this symptom, they're going to get this therapy always. It's like looking at what's actually the best thing for this person and what's really going to fit and what's going to speak to this person, too. Mm-hmm. It's because some people, they come in and they want a drug. That's what they want, and that's what's going to speak to them, and nothing else is going to do it. And other people are like, well, you know, if there's another way, can you tell me about it? Because I don't really want to go down this particular road. I want to try something else.
Right. Right. And that is, since I moved up here in 2004, I've been in practice. There was a couple-year period where I was still doing obstetrics in practice as well. That I do not do any longer. However, I still, you know, I take care of all ages. And I think it's part of it has resurrected in me again in the last couple of years. I'd been thinking more and more about functional medicine. I'd been introduced to the Institute for Functional Medicine, and I think it is over my time here, getting to know people, taking care of them over years, it's made me start to really dig a little bit more to think about what can I be doing. There's so many things we do well in medicine, and from my training standpoint, it's really based in acute care, and that's what doctor training is largely about, is acute care medicine. A problem comes to us, you try to fix it, but that we're dealing mostly with chronic care issues now, and that's where, for me, there's been a bit of a disconnect, because I see, as I treat people and I follow them over the years, we treat people with drugs, we're doing all of these things, and sometimes I don't necessarily feel as though I'm affecting as much change as I could be. And that's what really, last year, the timing worked out when I could go to the 5-day conference through the functional medicine. Just the stars aligned, things worked out, and I said, I got to go do it now. And it's really helped me to really rethink how I do things, my approach to things. And I think many doctors are doing this to some degree. I think most of us do. But for me, it's been really helpful to just think about all of the different fields that we have, all the different practitioners that we have, along with my approach to things. And maybe I feel like I'm learning more and more on a daily basis, really different ways to help people affect change, more so than prescribing a medicine in many cases.
And it seems like the demand for that is actually increasing as well. Do you find that?
I do. I have a real healthy practice, and I have a lot of patients who if there's a way to change how they feel or something, how something's functioning via diet, nutrition, exercise, that kind of stuff. People have been asking more and more, so it's been really fun for a transition that we're both kind of wanting the same thing, and I feel growing in the right direction.
That's great.
That's awesome.
You know, in our field of practice in Chinese medicine, a lot of what we see is chronic illness. And Chinese medicine requires really a holistic practitioner to be an expression of the kind of health and vitality that a patient might strive for. And so it's very implicating for the practitioner. You know, if you were going to go to a stockbroker, you wouldn't go to one who's obviously financially destitute, or you would.
or why would you go to, you know, like a, Kevin had an experience once of going to a pulmonary doctor who was overweight and smoked. So, so really, how much could you take what he said very seriously? But if you're actually, if you walk in the office and you are a picture of health and you're doing everything that you're asking your patients to do, I mean, you're proving to them that it's possible to do it. You know, even though people have busy lives, even though people have a lot going on, like if you can actually, you know, hold that truth for your patients and they can see that that's possible, then, you know, you can inspire them. So that's what we see as being part of our job, too.
Yeah, and it's one of the reasons we got into the medicine, because we knew if we did this, we would have to walk the talk. And we really wanted to commit our lives to do this. We wanted a profession that would demand that we had actually, you know, live according to these higher principles. And, of course, it's a humbling process because you could always do better. There's always, you know, more, you know, refinement and improvement. But it's a fun, you know, and challenging way to approach practice, and we love it.
But I want to go back to, so we talked about what is integrative medicine, but we really didn't define what functional medicine is. So from what I'm getting from what you're saying, we have integrative medicine, which is the right tool for the right job and matching up who's the person in front of you and getting them the care that they need. Functional medicine is looking at, like, what's the underlying issue because of what's going on with the patient. So it's not just really symptom focused. So if the patient comes in and they're having breathing issues, or they're having some sort of skin rash, or they have inflammation or digestive problems, you're not just going to try to make that surface symptom go away. You're really looking at what's the underlying issue and how do we get that to heal. Correct?
Correct. Yeah, it. We're really trained to try to come up with a diagnosis. And the way medicine is right now, we match diagnoses to picking the right drug. So we do a lot of symptom treatment. And if somebody has an ear infection, that's very appropriate. But when we're dealing with diabetes and heart disease or arthritis, there's a whole host of other things. So somebody's knee pain may be simply because they have sprained their knee, but it also may be underlying inflammation if they have arthritis. So then you have to start to think about their diet. Do they eat a lot of sugar, a lot of processed foods? So it's really taking what symptoms people come in with, and certainly if they're receptive to the concept, but it's really trying to dig deeper, like even if you have allergies, okay, why and where and what are we allergic to, rather than here's an antihistamine to treat your symptoms. Diabetes, you know, it's really difficult, I can say as a physician, sometimes to deal with people with diabetes, mostly because there's a whole change. If somebody really wants to change the fact that they have diabetes, I think taking something like that maybe is a difficult example, but people grow up with this idea, everybody in my family has had diabetes, and this is just what happens. And I think a lot of times they've never been told, you don't have to. This doesn't have to be your life. If there are things we can do. And really working with functional medicine, some of the really fun part of it has been for me is really stepping back and thinking about, well, why is this happening? More from a cell level in our body to make cells function well, but also how nutrition plays such a huge role, and helping people point out, like, their emotional well-being or spiritual well-being, the amount of physical activity they get. You know, it's kind of like a tree, you know. It takes the sun and water and nutrients, but we don't always think about our bodies that way. And we can, and that's what functional medicine is really about. It's a system-based approach to try to, first you want to find levels, different levels of dysfunction. What is going wrong and where is it going wrong and how can we fix that? Rather than just adding medicine on to different things or treating symptom approach, which doesn't change the course of a disease process.
We like to see what we do as gardening, really. You know, let's see, like, do you walk out of your house on June 1st and just toss the seeds on the ground and say, okay, you know, see you in August when you're a pumpkin or, you know, a cucumber or a tomato. You can't do that. You go out, you have to till the soil, you have to make sure the water balance is correct, you have to make sure the minerals are right. You know, do you have a lot of slugs? Do you have enough, you know, whatever supplements you're putting in the soil, you're like making it a nutritious place to support really good life. And so that, you know, that's really how I see what, you know, what you do in functional medicine. The idea is let's make this a supportive place for something to take hold and grow. It's you're setting the foundation for health.
Yeah, it sounds like you're, number one, remove the obstacles to vital health, and number two, reinforce the very mechanisms of healing that are naturally there in the body.
Right. And there are there's a bunch of different metaphors they teach us in functional medicine, and probably one of the neatest parts of it for me has been to reorganize really my thinking about what's happening. You know, you can take all of these symptoms, but really you can break them down into, is it a transport issue? Is it a communication issue? Is it an assimilating issue for your body or a structural integrity issue? There's these different balances or imbalances that we look at that helps you just look at things in a little bit different way. And that has really been able to help me rethink, why does this person have these symptoms, rather than treating the symptoms, which makes people feel better sometimes, but it's not getting to the root of the issue. The gardening analogy is great.
One of the other things, when you were just speaking, it reminded me of eighth grade biology, where we learned the circulatory system and we learned, you know, the gastrointestinal system, and we learned about the nervous system, and they were so separate from each other. There's this idea that, you know, even though we're talking systems that involve different organs working together, they were still sort of separate. But now you can see how, you know, in the gastrointestinal system, they know that there's more serotonin receptors in the gut than there is in the brain. You know, so if you have a wheat issue and you eat a lot of wheat, you're going to have a nervous system that's really upset, and you're going to be agitated, and you're not going to sleep really well. And what's that going to affect if you're not getting good rest? And on and on and on down the line. It's like,
you're listening to Radio Free Palmer, KVRF 89.5 on your FM dial. If you'd like to get involved with community radio, contact us at radiofreepalmer.org. This is your chance to invent community radio in Sutton, Chickaloon, Butte, Palmer, and the surrounding areas.
Thanks, everybody. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dr. Jill Valerius. You're listening to The Bridge to Everywhere with Kevin Middleton and Samantha Berg. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Bridge to Everywhere, and Sam and Kevin here, and we're talking with Dr. Jill Valerius about functional medicine. And what I'd like to know is, as we're talking about functional medicine, and we're looking at how maybe a system view of the body and not seeing so much the separate parts in isolation. And I'm wondering, how does that affect the trend towards specialization? And if a person is actually coming in to see a family practitioner, and they might get sent to a specialist for this or a specialist for that, would the trend in functional medicine change that?
That's a great question. I think it will change the approach that the subspecialist has with the patient. When I go to functional medicine conferences, I have sat down next to naturopaths, chiropractors, cardiologists, nephrologists, allergists, pediatricians. So really neurologists, the whole gamut. And I think mostly it would change a little bit how we look at things and maybe a little bit about how we do things, because there are certainly leading gastroenterologists and cardiologists and neurologists in the field of functional medicine. And they still do traditional medicine like they were trained, but there's a whole lot more that they're doing nutrition-based. Mm. Nutrition and diet and maybe supplements and sometimes utilizing botanicals. And those are all of the things that I'm learning more about that has just made this more fascinating and really fun to learn, because there's so many things that we can do. And I think being trained as physicians, we know that, but we're not generally trained a lot in nutrition. Most medical schools maybe have a number of hours.
I heard four or five.
Is what I mm-hmm. would hear too, and maybe that's mm-hmm. about what I had.
Yeah.
But so I think it will change a little bit the approach. I don't think it changes the fact of whether or not you're going to use subspecialists or not, because I think we certainly all have things that we can contribute. But I think it's looking at, you would look toward maybe a cardiologist who has that same kind of mindset of nutrition-based versus, maybe just meds or surgical intervention, that kind of thing. So I don't think it'll change it completely, but it changes how we all view a patient.
Great. Would patients know, what would they ask to find a physician that's trained in functional medicine? Is there credentialing that...
The only way there's credentialing in functional medicine is through the Institute for Functional Medicine. And they're just now starting to do a board certification. The first one will be offered next year. To find somebody who is practicing functional medicine, I think I would suggest people go to the website for the Institute for Functional Medicine. What it implies for a practitioner that is listed on their page is that you have gone through the 5-day applying functional medicine and clinical practices course. That's not listing right now certified functional medicine providers, but it is talking about the people who have gone through the 5-day course. And so you can't just join the Institute for Functional Medicine and then become listed as a provider. So right now, that is the basis for how they list people. I suspect that will change eventually, or it may stay the same, but it will also indicate which ones are board certified in functional medicine.
I see. And how big of a trend is this, and at what stage are we at in the evolution of functional medicine integrating within allopathic care?
I think that there's providers in functional medicine right now that have been doing this for 40 years. So people have been practicing functional medicine for a long time. Those are few. We're now seeing it in residency programs in family medicine. There's a few in the country that are having functional medicine as part of their curriculum, which I think is great. So I think we're at the beginning of, I think, will be a pretty large movement, or at least I hope that, just because it seems like the direction to move, especially in terms of medicine. And if, you know, my goal has always been to help people, and that's why I went into this. And I have been helping people for many years, but I feel like I'm learning to help more or better.
So let's take a typical patient who comes in. Let's say somebody who's, you know, maybe in their early 50s and they're a little bit overweight and they've started to have some high blood pressure, and maybe they're hypoglycemic right now. They're having like blood sugar crashes. They're not showing up as diabetic on a blood test. You know, they don't have that blood sugar elevated enough, but there's a bunch of warning signs that things are not going in the right direction. You know, and so what would be the approach that you know, the conventional approach to treating this person, and what would be more of the functional medicine approach?
The conventional approach would be, you know, to advise somebody that they need to lose weight and exercise, which is the same thing that I would do as a functional medicine approach. But right now we don't, you know, we have these cutoffs. Either you are or not a diabetic. It kind of looks like your sugar's trending higher. In functional medicine, from that approach, and you have to gauge where the patient is at, certainly. I have patients who are very interested in that, and so that's starting to become incorporated into this relationship we've had for 8 years. And there's some people who aren't ready for that or not interested, or wherever they're at in their disease process or beginnings of. Functional medicine, I'd be a little bit more aggressive, but I've also learned a little bit more about talking to people about maybe a low glycemic index food plan. Mm. And I've got lots of tools that I can help lay this out really pretty simply for someone, rather than just a list of don't do this and do this. And those are hard things, because people see do's and don'ts, and that plays kind of funny games in your mind and makes you want things. And
well, you're trying to get people to change on a fundamental level, and you know, we've noticed when it comes to diet, trying to get people to make changes, especially if they've been doing it a particular way for a long time, or it's been working for them, maybe from a financial standpoint. You know, they've got three kids to feed, and they're, you know, and
or convenience, and, you know, yeah.
So there's a
household.
So you're dealing with like ideas. You know, you're dealing with like ways that people think things have to be, and just simply giving somebody a list of do this and don't do that, and not really helping them through that, and having them actually examine what's going on, what are the limiting beliefs, and why are they? I mean, everybody knows, really. I mean, there isn't anybody who's listening right now who doesn't know that they need to get a certain amount of exercise every day. They need to get, you know, 8 hours of sleep. They need to eat good food. You know, they need to manage their stress, but yet we don't do it. So, I mean, so that's really the trick, is how do we, and, you know, and so it's not that Western, you know, conventional medicine is not saying that to people, but how do we actually figure out, okay, so the person knows that, but why are they not doing it, and how can we help them to do it? And how can they take responsibility for their health?
Yeah, one of our mentors in our training, you know, says everybody wants to feel better, but nobody wants to change. And, you know, you know, so it seems like a big part of our work is really to inspire change, you know, to really inspire that.
It really comes down to that. And it's assessing where someone is in that readiness scale, or maybe not, or and just becoming aware. So it is learning to kind of assess where someone is at, and then learning how to start to affect change. You know, there's ways. I have people who hate to exercise. People that know me know that I probably don't get it. but I understand. And then it's a matter of, instead of parking in the first parking space at the grocery store, park out three more parking spaces. It's a couple more minutes. But, you know, it's little things like that. And I've used that with people, and pretty soon they come in and they go, I park on way on the outside of the parking lot now, and then I walk into the store. And it's just learning to affect change. And when I can hand somebody a kind of a food plan, and I can do waist to hip measurements, there's lots of things that I can do that will more objectivize how are we doing. The scale is a terrible thing. I want you to lose weight. Well, the scale never changes. I mean, and I see that in all body shapes and sizes, and that's so frustrating for people. But if you start to measure somebody's waist or their hips, you can start to see those things. Better yet would be if I had a bioelectric impedance and I can show somebody that they changed their body fat percentage mm-hmm. by a point or two, mm-hmm. which I will get there to have that tool as well. Those are fun things to be able to affect change. And that's the approach that functional medicine is using. It's finding some of those objective measures we can do and then just assessing where someone's at to be able to help them start to make a change and point out different things as to why it's advantageous. I mean, most people with diabetes have been told you can lose your feet, you can lose your eyesight, you're going to have kidney disease, you can end up on dialysis. But there's so many things, too, that we can change in just educating people. Number one, you don't have to have this. You have the power to change it. And a lot of people, I don't think, understand that they have that power's within them to do that.
We definitely see that sense of powerlessness, especially when what you described where somebody comes in and, you know, it's diabetes runs in my family and this is just my lot. And like, this is just how it goes. This is what I get. But, you know, well, what's your family been eating? You know, you grew up in your family and what are they eating? You know, and we often share with them. I think it was on Dr. Oz even made a comment a few years ago about genetics. Once you get into adulthood is like one third of determines who you are and two thirds is lifestyle. So you absolutely have control over it. And then we also talk about the new science of epigenetics, which shows that, again, absolutely, you have control by what you do, by how you take care of yourself, how you manage your stress, what you eat, whether you exercise. It turns certain genes on and turns certain genes off. So just because you came from a family of overweight diabetics who had heart attacks early doesn't mean that that is your lot in life. You know, you have some, you definitely have some genetic risk from that, but that's not who you have to be. And so again, you were talking about, you know, working with people on a deeper level. And if you only had 5 minutes to spend with somebody, you can't really get into that. So I mean, what you're looking at doing really requires more time than a lot of people expect to get in a regular doctor's office, too, right?
Right, it does. And right now, I'm incorporating that in with my patients that I've known for a very long time. We do snippets here and there if they're receptive to that. So I can utilize all these things that I'm learning for each person. But I have started to also set aside some time. If somebody wants to come in kind of for more of a functional medicine evaluation, if they specify that, I will set aside more time. More time generally bills at a higher rate, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to do that. I really enjoy it, and it really helps me, solidify the things that I'm learning and be able to pass it on because it's really fun when people come in and want to try to change things. I mean, it's great fun to do that.
Yeah, and you're not waiting for to see a number on a test that falls off the chart on one side or the other to go, okay, now we can treat you. You know, I have one patient who told this story. She actually was a nurse, and one of the first things she told me was that for 5 years, her thyroid tests were showing her TSH was getting, her thyroid stimulating hormone was getting higher and higher and higher, literally for 5 years. And then at a certain point, that number went high enough where they said, oh, well, now we can put you on Synthroid because you're hypothyroid. And she's like, what do you mean now we can put you on Synthroid? And they showed her her charts, and they showed her that she just became, like, this number was going up and up and up. So why didn't they address it 5 years ago? they saw a trend happening, but nobody actually did anything until she could actually be diagnosed as hypothyroid. So that kind of makes us laugh.
Something that with functional medicine there would be an approach or a strategy you would take earlier?
There are, because there's nutritional and dietary things that you can do, which you guys know, to address thyroid function. So you can affect change. Maybe it's medicine, maybe it's not. Maybe it's as simple as a supplemental thing you can do. It really looks at that exactly. And that's an analogy they teach us in functional medicine, how as physicians we're trained to watch somebody's liver functions be kind of high. But
before you do anything.
We're waiting for something. So we watch them.
Right.
But so, yeah, it's learning tools and things that I can help people. Like, well, wait a minute, this is what we can change, and this is what this indicates. So we need to help your liver.
I think people are so used to, like, it's almost like they think you do a blood test is like you're pressing a button and getting a computer printout, you know, and then, okay, so now and then the person actually, I've seen people get upset because their blood test came back perfectly normal, but they didn't feel really well. So they have a blood test that comes back that says everything's fine. And they're like, well, wait a second. I don't feel healthy. Like, things are not right. But, you know, we always tell them that, well, I mean, this is a good thing that your liver enzymes are not showing elevated. I mean, yes, that's something to treat. But by the time that shows up in somebody's blood test, they've been out of balance for a really long time. You know, like, the last thing that's going to show up, the last thing that's going to go is the, you know, the blood test is going to show there's a problem. So right now you're not feeling well. You know there's something wrong internally, and that you should listen to that. And so this is the time that we can turn this around. We don't want to wait until it becomes embedded in physiology, because it's a lot harder to turn around if there's already damage to an organ or the organ's already showing stress. Like, we want to look at it, and this is where the term functional medicine comes in with what we do. It's we know what those organs do in the body. We know what they're functionally supposed to do and how they work together. And if we see evidence in how the person presents themselves that they're not, those things are not happening like they're supposed to, we can treat that. We don't have to wait until the blood test says, okay, now you're sick.
Right. It's all about looking at maybe optimizing health and wellness and preventing disease. And wellness isn't merely an absence of disease.
Right.
Looking at, one thing I think that is a little bit challenging, being a physician, it's our whole insurance system, the way it's set up. So take your thyroid patient, for example. I can do a screening thyroid test. If I do the whole panel, which can help me, and may help you,
so you're saying
so that I can look at
TSH, you're testing free T3 and free T4,
correct,
and all that kind of stuff, right?
Insurance isn't always going to pay for that,
right?
And that's a fine balance. If a patient wants that, I can explain that to them. And sometimes, if the TSH is abnormal, I can go back and add those, but I can also add a code for abnormal thyroid function. And then the insurance company will pay for it then. I think that's one challenge. And I think sometimes physicians get criticized on this because we're not ordering all these things. Well, I certainly have the ability to order a slew of tests if I so choose, anything. But the way our healthcare system is right now, and the way people think about healthcare system and their insurance and that kind of stuff, we don't want to pay for things. We'll service our cars better than we will service our bodies.
Exactly.
So it's really a balance. So sometimes when physicians are criticized for not doing all the thyroid studies and that, I can do them, and I'm more than happy to do them, and I know how to utilize those results. However, the patient has to understand it might not be paid for sometimes.
Right.
And sometimes if you read some of the functional medicine literature, they encourage us to do that. And that makes sense to me. However, there's also a balance. When you're a practicing physician, there's a balance of doing the right thing for the patient so that the patient understands why you're doing things. But also, I don't like to surprise people.
Right.
And the last thing I want to do is have somebody come up with a huge bill that they don't quite understand why, or just to surprise them with it. So that there's a bit of a balance there, and that's part of our insurance and healthcare system the way it is, which I think as functional medicine takes hold, that also can play a huge role in our healthcare system, because instead of being disease focused, it will become more maybe wellness and system based and personalized care rather than care for the populations.
And you're talking about a whole responsibility issue. You know, you think about, I mean, employers are starting to see that if they have employees who are non-smokers, they save a lot of money in their health care costs. Or they see, you know, if they provide a gym membership, that their employees are, you know, they're less stressed and they are often going to be, you know, more productive. So there's some of that. It seems like it's an employer, because a lot of times employers are picking up the tab for health care costs. I know I think Starbucks is like paying more in healthcare costs than they are for coffee or
something crazy like that.
Yeah. So the people who are mostly paying for insurance, I mean, they're paying for it, even if the employee appears to just not be paying for it, their employer is paying. So I see some of that driving it. But I think what you're pointing to is a really interesting problem of you've got an insurance company standing in between you and your doctor and really in between you're trying to get healthcare that you need. The doctor's trying to offer all that they have to offer and give you all the options, but yet you can't necessarily take advantage of it because your insurance company may or may not allow you to take advantage of what that person has to offer. You know, and furthermore, I mean, some people don't, I mean, go to the, are so, who don't even want to know, so they don't even know what their insurance company will cover or not. So, you know, it's, and other people are more involved, at least in that level, and they'll fight their insurance companies. I had a woman who actually fought with her insurance company because she felt like mammography, she'd had 14 mammograms and then was diagnosed with cancer, and she actually fought with her insurance company to get them to cover thermography because she felt like in her case it was dangerous to continue doing mammography, and she, you know, took her insurance company to them, but not everybody does that. A lot of people feel like, oh, well, this is just what's covered, you know. So there's, again, it's that powerlessness that you're talking about. People feel like, you know, well, my insurance company says this isn't covered. Well, you're the customer, so you can talk to the insurance company and say, no, I want this service. You know, that's part of what I'm paying for.
Now, I want to ask a question about insurance. Now, it seems intuitive and pretty obvious that, you know, a more preventative approach to, you know, preventative screening, lifestyle, this is going to save money. I mean, this is really obvious, but the industry is driven by data. But now, when you prevent a disease, how do you show savings that, you know, you can't prove the disease would have happened? And so there's sort of this place. How do we get beyond that? You know, how do we find some kind of platform to push in that direction without the kind of data that industry would demand to make change?
Yeah, can you fix this problem, Dr. Jill? We'll get the president on the phone and we'll...
It's interesting because, and well-being is not quantifiable in any objective means, you know, it's just, and if you prevent an illness, there's no, you know, so how do you...
one of our friends likes to say if somebody lives, you know, to 100 years old and then they die and they didn't really get sick and they contributed to their community, did anything happen? And we really look at heroics as what we pay for, you know, like for pretty significant interventions is what gets paid for, but just keeping people healthy sort of under the radar for 100 years doesn't really have any value in a way.
I think that if there's more research, and the Institute for Functional Medicine is trying to work more on some ground-level research and practice research, where if we can take a subset of patients, say, with diabetes, and you can enlist them in change, and we can incorporate nutrition, diet, exercise, you know, maybe some stress management. If we can look at all of those things, and if we can take this cohort of patients who has an objectively maybe quantifiable disease state, go through these changes over a matter of months or years, and I think really you're going to look at a matter of months if you could really do some intensive lifestyle changes, maybe that's the part that will help drive some of that change. I have this conversation with patients on nearly a daily basis in clinic because people aren't always aware of what their insurance covers or what it doesn't cover. And it's amazing today how some people, I don't know if I want to get a colonoscopy or I don't know about a mammogram right now because their insurance won't cover it. So it's a really difficult situation that we're in, but it's going to take people having more self-responsibility and also having the willingness to fight the battles. because that's really what it takes. Those insurance companies, we deal with them on a daily basis with medical pre-approvals and prior authorizations. And it takes, I don't know how many hours a week, but I know that my medical assistant can be on the phone for a half hour for one pre-authorization, for one medicine.
Well, you couldn't actually run a practice if you were actually having to deal with the insurance company directly and treat the patients. You could maybe treat one or two patients a day.
Right.
There'd be no way.
But if more, as long as, I guess, we continue to kind of fight the battle, if you will, and if patients are more willing, that's what's going to drive it. You know, it's just like our food industry in our country.
Mm-hmm.
The more people demand real food and organic food and whole food, the more we'll get it.
Right.
But it's not going to be easy.
Right. And in the insurance industry, what I really like is the option, it's the health savings account or medical savings account model, where somebody gets catastrophic insurance coverage. So they're covered if they have a car accident or there's some sort of major illness happen. So the big things that you know, that your average person could not actually pay out of pocket, no matter how many credit cards they got, those things are covered. And then you have a medical savings account where you put a certain amount of money aside every month, and then you decide what to do with that money. It comes out of your paycheck pre-tax. It goes into an account, and if you want to use it to get a mammogram, or you want to use it to get acupuncture treatment, or you want to use it for a chiropractic adjustment or a massage or whatever it is to stay healthy, it's like the choice is put back in your hands. Like, you can choose, this is where I want to spend my healthcare dollars. You know, and again, but that comes down to personal responsibility and people actually, once again, being willing to pay to stay healthy. And I think probably the biggest thing about insurance that I see is that this idea that I'm paying this amount of money per month and then my health is somebody else's responsibility. And so we have to go back to that place of, it comes back to personal responsibility and what am I actually doing to stay healthy? And then your role as a provider becomes, how do I help them? You know, they're asking the question, and how do I help them do that? You know, because I can give them advice.
Right. There's a pretty big movement now, and there's a lot of different pay structures out there to try and remove the insurer as the intermediary, because it's really helpful. It's interesting, if a patient is paying cash, they're looking for something from me, which is very much to be expected, but I also am answering to that person, which gives us a good relationship.
Right.
Because we're both seeking something mm-hmm. there. When you have the insurance layer in the middle, the patient doesn't know what they're paying. I'm not responsible in some senses to the patient anymore. I'm responsible to the insurance company.
And they're not responsible to make sure that you get paid for the service that you did.
Exactly.
So there's a disconnect. It's like buying, it's like if your car insurance was sitting in between you and the car salesman. You know, like right now we negotiate, I want this kind of car and I want it to do this, but your insurance company says, no, you know, I know that I understand that you want a Ford Explorer, but you can only have a VW Bug.
Right.
We're coming down to the last minute of the show, and we just wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe say the range of conditions you've seen to really effectively be treated with functional medicine and how people can follow up with you if they want to pursue your care.
Some of the things that I've seen most dramatically changed are arthritis-type conditions.
Rheumatoid.
And helping people to get on more of an anti-inflammatory diet. Diabetes. And heart disease can really change, too, via changing diet.
So some of these chronic illnesses that people think of incurable.
Right.
Yeah. So.
And how do they find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me would be through the office, and that's Capstone Family Medicine in Wasilla. The number's 357-9590. And certainly if someone is interested in seeing me from a functional medicine standpoint, if they'll let the receptionist know that, because I need to schedule that differently, and I'm going to tend to schedule an hour for that appointment versus a standard maybe half-hour appointment.
Great.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Valerius, for being here. That was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, wonderful to have you on the show, and we'll have that information on our Facebook page.
All of it will be up on our Facebook page and our resource notes. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Thank
you,
everyone.
Thanks so much. Thank you for joining us on The Bridge to Everywhere, broadcasting on KVRF 89.5 Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Like us on Facebook at Bridge to Everywhere to access more information, links and resources from our guests and show topics.